You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
A small red square pinned to a blouse, shirt, or jacket is their symbol, and a pot or casserole, rhythmically struck with a wooden ladle, announces their presence. It would be hard to find a corner of Quebec that couldn't recognize what this means. For months and months, through winter, spring, and summer, in the hundreds, in the thousands, and in the hundreds of thousands, students and Quebecois of all ages have proudly worn the red square and beaten the casseroles, standing on their balconies and marching in the rallies. Yet throughout, the government of Jean Charest has been not only intransigent, but aggressively repressive and contemptuous of the students opposing his tuition hikes. Charest now has calculated a summer election is his only hope of political survival, given his inability to crush the student movement or contain spreading rejection of his neoliberal economics that the student movement has sparked. To explore the current dynamic of the struggle in Quebec, I'm joined by Roger Annis. Roger is a retired machinist, a writer, and an activist, and he recently has spent time in Quebec to learn more of this unprecedented student movement. We've spoken before with you on this topic, Roger, and we're happy to be able to speak with you again. Welcome to Red Eye.
Oh, you're welcome. It's good to be with you.
Every day seems to bring some new surprises, but before we get to the unpredicted, can you outline for us currently what are the activities the student movement are organizing?
Well, everything is focused now on the return to school, both in the cégeps and on the universities, and the return dates vary from school to school, but roughly starting this coming Monday for the next 2 weeks, depending on the school, there'll be university administrators and the government want those students whose school year was suspended by Law 78 back in May to return to class. And so these are the institutions that were on strike as of the time that Law 78 was passed. Those institutions that had not been on the unlimited strike more or less finished their school year. So it's roughly half of the post-secondary students in the province that are in this situation. And so meetings are taking place, intense meetings and discussions are taking place about what to do in the midst of the election campaign. The essential decision is do we go back to class or not? That's the big decision. Whether or not the strike will continue as such, you know, is really, that's sort of the nuts and bolts of what students face. Many would argue, and there was a very eloquent letter to this effect, or op-ed, really, that was published in Le Devoir a couple of days ago that by a student in Saint-Jérôme, Quebec, that let's go back to class for a couple of weeks until the election is over. We'll see who wins the election, what they say that they intend to do, and then we'll decide on that basis whether or not to resume the strike. So so that's where things are. And then this weekend, all of the student associations themselves are having meetings, some of them conferences, to decide. It's a complex set of decisions that they have to make, but I think, you know, the fundamental issues that have been driving the student strike remain more or less intact. And so whatever decisions that are made to govern these weeks to come until the end of the election, we shouldn't read too much into what will be decided, because the real test will be the government that is elected, or maybe the old government, we hope not, but whatever government is elected on September 4th, we'll see then how it intends to go forward from there.
I gather there was a statement issued by professors about the position the government's put them in terms of resuming classes. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, this is yet another statement by professors saying that they won't be, they won't allow the government to use them as tools in the government's drive against the strike. And remember, as you noted in your introduction, President Jean Charest has more or less made, at least at the outset, made this election to be a referendum or not to crush the student movement. He says, I want a mandate in order to continue with the tuition fee increase, and also with Law 78 that will throw into jail or impose heavy fines on any student or student organization that is not willing to go along with my tuition fee hike. And so professors all we have been quite firm in saying that we will not be the tools of the government in this drive. We're paid to do our job. We will do our job according to the law and so forth. But we're also part of a social movement for better education in the province. We support the student movement. We identify with the student movement. And so, you know, yet again this week was another impressive statement by professors and teachers in the province to that effect.
One grouping of students, I don't know how large or significant it is, have declared that where there is a vote to sustain the strike and not go back to school, they'll form what they call a Maginot Line to block other students from attending. Do you have any ideas to the significance of that?
No, because I'm not back to Montreal this coming week for 2 weeks to be part of all the events and learn more what I can and be more effective in doing things like this interview to let people in the rest of the country know what's going on. But I mean, this is part of the discussion in the movement about what are we going to do. And I think you know, this idea that there will be you know, very vigorous and militant and so on picket lines, as we saw back in March, April, and May, in front of the institutions to communicate the goals and the message of the strike, you know, very forcefully. You know, I don't see that the numbers that will do that are going to emerge. I can't say directly on this statement exactly how much of a cross section of the student it represents, but you know, many students are are very anxiously awaiting to see what the election result will do. And of course, many are actively engaged in the process and trying to influence the outcome. And I think that that's clearly from some of the votes that we saw this week about whether to immediately resume the strike or not, indicate that there's a large body of public opinion, large body of opinion among the students to see what we can do to maximize our influence through the course of this electoral process, and then we'll take things from there.
Now, one big surprise this week was the resignation of Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois. He's been a prominent spokesperson of the largest and most radical student union, CLOS. What can you tell us about him himself, the role he's played so far?
Well, the role has been outstanding, as with the rest of them. I mean, all of them have been just so coherent, so dedicated to the cause, so so very outstanding. And this, you know, comes through. I mean, when he or other significant leaders of the, or shall I say, well-known leaders of the strike do something publicly, it becomes major news in Quebec, and that was the case with his decision to step aside as a spokesperson for CLOS. That's what he's decided. He won't be the sort of one of the main spokespeople. He'll continue to be active in the federation itself. So these student leaders have won terrific admiration from right across Quebecois society. That remains the case today, and something I think we can all be very encouraged by and very impressed by.
He published a statement in Le Devoir, the French newspaper, French language newspaper. What was the explanation he gave for his resignation as a spokesperson, though he's remaining active in the movement and in the struggle?
Yeah, we don't know all the circumstances for sure. You know, I'm going to go on a limb and say for sure this is you know, it's very unfortunate for the movement that that he has done this, and I say that not as a criticism of him. I say what the impact of this will be on the movement. Clearly, from all that we can see, and this will become a little clearer in the days to come because the student associations, including CLOS itself, are meeting in conferences this weekend. So we'll know a little bit more of the underlying situation in the coming days. But obviously there are some differing appreciations and differing views of what to do right now in the student movement with the scheduled return to class and, of course, the election itself taking place. I will hazard to say that there are, you know, differing appreciations in class over this these issues as to what to do in the immediate term and possibly in the longer term that underlie Gabrielle's resignation as spokesperson. I listened to a CBC News report this morning on the House from one of their correspondents in Montreal, and I think it's kind of unfortunate the spin that was given on this, and it's not really the CBC reporter's fault because some of what's in Gabrielle's letter would lend one to think this, but you know, Gabrielle underlined in the letter just how serious and debilitating the government's attacks on the student movement has been, going so far even as to almost to label them as being, you know, social political terrorists in the province and so on. You know, I think the unfortunate part of that in the CBC report is they're giving the impression that Gabrielle is somehow discouraged by this, is worn out, is, you know, has been beaten down and so on, and I think that's not at all the case. You know, he chose in his letter of resignation as spokesperson to focus the issue, as always, on the government's proposed tuition fee hikes and the aspirations of the Quebec people for a system of free and quality education. And, yeah, I mean, of course, that's how he should have framed it in the letter, but I think it's, you know, it's being given a bit of a misinterpretation. So all this will become clear, I think, because, you know, whatever the issues are, and we can talk about them a bit as we talk about the election, you know, there are really important issues here for the student movement to discuss out. We will learn a great deal by following them on this and hearing what they have to say. So I expect that, you know, we'll certainly see Gabrielle in the forefront of those discussions in the weeks to come.
You know, you mentioned the election. We'll get to that right now then. Sheree called it, obviously hoping to sidestep investigation into government corruption, an investigation that isn't scheduled to resume until after the election. But here, too, there's been a surprise. A former police officer and prominent anti-corruption crusader in Quebec has joined a new right-wing party precisely to bring this corruption issue to the foreground. His name is Jacques Duchesnay. Could you tell us a little bit about him and the political party he's joined, whose acronym is CAQ, standing for Coalition Avenir Québec?
Yes, as you say, this is the right-wing party that's really a continuation of a previous party that was really along the same lines, the Action Démocratique du Québec. It's a right-wing party that tries to straddle the line between Quebec independence and Canadian federalism. So it's continuing that vein. They scored quite a coup a week ago by obtaining the candidacy of Jacques Duchesneau in the election. Duchesneau is called by the mainstream media the Elliot Ness of Quebec. Remember, we've talked about the student struggle so far, but the other main issue going into this election was that of political and economic elite corruption. It's been very deep going in Quebec. It's a very deeply something the Quebec population resents very deeply, how the ties between government and the construction industry in particular, although one could talk about other industries as well, such as mining and the large-scale industries, just how close a number of preceding Quebec governments have been with the construction and other large industries, widespread examples and cases of corruption, so much so that Jean Charest earlier this year was compelled to convene a public inquiry into the whole topic. He says this will get to the bottom of the matter, we'll clean up the corruption, blah, blah, things will carry on. Well, the timing of the commission was such it began its hearings in June, but then was basically took a break from now until October. So this was a big factor in Charest's decision on the timing of the election, because he could have called the election any time in the forthcoming year, but he chose this month of August 1 because it's a period of downturn in the Quebec struggle, in the student struggle. Students are not in class and so forth. But the other important thing is that the Commission of Inquiry into Corruption was in its hold mode until October, and so he hoped this whole issue of what the commission is looking into would be basically on the sidelines. Well, that all kind of blew up in their face with the the nomination of Ducheneau, who's not only a candidate for, but who has repeated his allegations, quite startling allegations that he made when he testified before the commission in June, to the effect that 70% of all funding of political parties in Quebec in past years has been illegal, that is, not abiding by the electoral law, which has strict regulations for the financing of political parties and so forth. So, yeah, this has given a big boost to the Coalition Avenir du Québec, to the point where, according to a couple of polls published just yesterday, the party is very close behind now, the Parti Québécois and the Liberal Party. So you have now almost a three-way race. I don't think that the Coalition Party will, you know, will be able to keep those high poll numbers. But it's certainly a factor in the polls. And now its program, its policies, its candidates are a factor in what will happen to Charest and the Liberal Party, because now all of a sudden they can't sweep the issue of corruption under the keep it swept under the rug. It's out there now as a big part of the political campaign and debate. But of course, the third party, third political party, which is a factor in all this, is the Parti Québécois. And yeah, that's roughly where things stand now with the three large mainstream parties.
There's one other electoral party, Québec Solidaire. It has had one of its co-spokespeople, Amir Kadir, elected to the Assembly in Quebec. But as this campaign began, he was subjected to vicious attack by Gilles Duceppe, the former head of the Bloc Québécois, and also a prominent trade unionist in Quebec has decided that he's going to run against Kadir in his constituency. What does all that signify?
Well, the Parti Québécois considers itself to have the right to a monopoly over the pro-independence or pro-sovereignty political viewpoint in Quebec, and so they are, to say the least, been very unfriendly towards the campaign of Québec Solidaire, and that's what we saw reflected both in Gilles Duceppe's public statement, his quite vociferous personal attack on Amir Kadir, saying he wasn't really committed to the principle of what Duceppe calls Quebec sovereignty, and the man that Kadir and his party were opportunists. Really quite underhanded, very distasteful and untruthful attacks by Duceppe, which Pauline Marois, the leader of the Parti Québécois, more or less associated herself with. So the tensions are great because Quebec Solidaire's prominence is on the rise, thankfully. They have put forward in this election campaign a very appealing political program for working class people. They're saying things like the welfare rates in the province should rise close to double the current rate. The minimum wage should go up 20%. The pensions paid to retired workers and others in Quebec, that is the Quebec pension plan, which is sort of a subset of the Canadian pension plan, the payments there should be more than doubled, that the government should be creating new taxes on the wealthy and also on the resource corporations who, like mining companies, who get such a free ride in Quebec. It's in favor of proportional representation, big plans for expanding public transit, electrification of an expansion of rail transport. So a pretty attractive political program, and in the polls at the beginning of this past week, the party's standing was up to 6%, which is pretty good for the outset of an electoral campaign. So, yes, unfortunately, these attacks on Quebec Solidaire is, you could say, well, let's look at them as a good thing. The party is having an impact, and so that's a good sign. Very unfortunate, the candidacy of Jean Poirier. He's a local union leader of the Machinist Union. Formerly at Air Canada, he was part of the spin-off that Air Canada did of Avios, their maintenance division for aircraft. So, yeah, he's been put up as a candidate of the Parti Québécois against Amir Kadir himself in Mercier Riding, and very unfortunate decision by the Parti Québécois but I would say even for his union and the union federation he's a part of, his Kadir is a very well respected and justly so leader of progressive political and social thought and action in Quebec, and that's a most unfortunate decision to try and undercut his candidacy by putting forward someone with some labor and socially progressive credentials.
Well, thank you very much, Roger, and best wishes for you as you make your upcoming journey to Quebec to learn more about these developments.
Oh, thanks. Well, it's been good talking to your listeners.
I've been speaking with Roger Annis. Roger's a retired machinist. He's a journalist and a Haiti solidarity activist.